Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And today I have a great show for you. It's one of those shows that you'll always appreciate later down the road. Because today I want to talk about having a bad day at the cosmic office or in the real world at your everyday job office. Now, I know really, truly, all of you who are listening never have that happen because you're all on your spiritual path, and of course you never get upset or have issues with your boss or any of those kinds of things. It's interesting as I become more spiritual and work on my spiritual path that some days I'm just wondering, really, about, have you ever really wondered, are you on your spiritual path? And what is the spiritual path? What is that? I often think sometimes I just need to have a little talk to spirit, you know, and ask, what am I doing here? What is this earth thing about? Especially I ask that when I don't like where I am or I'm feeling put upon by somebody or in poor me. Someone is abusing me. Now, spiritually and analytically as a spiritual being, I know that no one can do anything to me unless I give them permission or allow them to. But sometimes I just get in that mode where I forget that I'm a spiritual being first and that spirit is driving. I think it's all about me. It's my world after all, and I'm in it, and I'm in the poor me of it sometimes. And so I think in some way I'm being abused, taken advantage of, someone's being mean to me, all those illusions that we create and play our sympathy record on. And by the way, we don't play those records anymore. We don't play 45s. We don't even play tapes or records. Or now we don't even pay CDs. We're in those little iPod things. But we seem to tend to play that 1-800 wham music sometimes that hurts so good and goes on and makes us more miserable by the minute. As a spiritual being, I know I should say, Spirit, what do you want of me in this moment? What is this about? I remember when I was first into metaphysics, and I got that I was co-creator. I didn't really like that very much because that somehow meant that I had to be responsible in some way for whatever situation I was in. And, you know, it's interesting how easily, you know, when we're in church or when we're at that workshop, that great workshop, and we're spiritually high from the message and we really got it, and we go into our life for about 4 days, we're really good, and on the fifth or sixth day, we start waning. And we get in that, what was I thinking about this job? What induced me to work here? And we get caught up in all of that craziness. Some of you will remember watching the movie Karate Kid. It's a great movie. It's a great spiritual movie in many, many ways. You will remember the kid is waxing the cars, and it's wax on and wax off, and he's painting the fence in the house. And then he gets mad, and he gets the feeling that this old man is just using him as a personal slave labor. But the master shows up and says, wait a minute, let's look at what you really learned while you've been doing all this work. And the master says, show me wax on and wax off. And the kid shows him his movements. And he finds out that he has learned a lot of physical movements by the wax on and wax off. And in the discipline of his mind, he has found a lot of discipline just by doing the work. By completing a job sometimes, we really get a lot of mind education and expandedness. Often when spirit puts us in a job we hate, it is not about us liking the job. It is a lesson bigger than that. And when a boss is not nice to you, and sometimes you think it's so about you, it isn't about you at all, but about the boss's fears sometimes. You could be doing a great job thinking you are helping them look good, and doing the very best you can, only to find out the boss thinks you're after their job. When in fact, you're not after their job at all. You don't even want their job. You don't want the extra headaches of being the boss. You know, you don't want the salary. You like being on the clock because after all, you get overtime and they don't. But we don't see it that way in that moment when that boss or that person's yelling at us. If you take time in that moment to ask Spirit, what am I doing here in this job? Why does this boss dislike me or treat me the way they are treating me? You might get an answer that there is something going on much more profound than what is about me in that moment. You might find out you're there to help the boss with their fears, to give them a chance to change their choices, or to forgive them for their actions. Sometimes we really get caught up in the give and take of something. We forget that golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But when we get in our life, everyday life, and we move forward and realize how profound that golden rule is, and that if we retaliate, say, well, the boss is being nasty to me, and so I'm going to be angry and go on and be nasty to them, that action actually escalates in our world, and soon in everyone in our office is affected, and that natural law of action and reaction has gone into overload. And so, you know, as I get into the office politics, I don't care if you work in a job where you have office politics going on, or you're working with a board of some kind, say you're in the city council and you're working in a board, or you're in a church and you're working for a board, any organization where you have a hierarchy. We get into that stuff, you know, in whatever we're doing. Even I don't care if you're working at the latte stand with coworkers. We get into that gossipness sometimes. That really doesn't serve us. I was reading in a manual, a spiritualist manual, about gossip, and I thought this was a very profound little statement, so I'd like to share it with you. This is the mental habit of discussing one's neighbor with a total disregard for the actual reality of the case. It is destructive in its tendency because of this disturbed the mental atmosphere. And it does. It disturbs our mental atmosphere, it creates a reaction and disharmony. It is the habit of pointing out the petty imperfections of others and enlarging upon it. The antidote for this is pointing out the goodly qualities of others and learning the art of being kind. And so rather than gossip, it's better to take a moment and take a deep breath and say, what if this were me? You know, my mother used to always say, if you can't say something nice, be vague. And really, truly, I learned early in my childhood, actually, that not to gossip, because if you gossip, you're going to be the next victim. And that's true. That really, truly, all this nastiness, this anger, this stuff that might spew out of us at times, is really something that's bigger than what in the moment is happening. We are reacting to an action of another person, but we're not taking a moment to think about why is this person acting in this way. You know, for every action, there is a reaction. So to cause the right reaction, I must cause the right action. So our choices in every moment are very important. And as spiritual, the more that we take workshops, the more that we clear out our debris fields, our auric fields, our energy fields, and change our belief system, and start really getting that we're co-creating, and in this moment, why did I co-create this action? What is going on here that's bigger than me? And can I make a bigger choice than the limitedness of my woundedness in this moment? And it's hard because, you know, we're taught from a very young age, you know, we're not taught to turn the other cheek, even though it's in most of our great religions. We are taught when we get hit by the kid on the playground to hit back. I don't know, I was raised with five brothers, you know. And my first reaction is defend myself because they're bigger than me. And, you know, even though I knew it wasn't going to work, I would still hit. Now, I could outrun them for a while, but, you know, I still had to rest and sit down and stop. And so retaliation is, in our world, is very prevalent. And the bully on the playground, it starts with the bullies on the playground. And as we become more spiritual and you see these indigos and these rainbows and these crystal children choose to react differently and to hold people accountable in a very dramatically different way by not physical violence, but by sometimes saying, why did you do that? I choose not to let you hurt me in that way. We grow spiritually, and these new kids are really teaching us and calling us on our stuff. As we awaken to our spiritual responsibility, we will have less days, bad days at the cosmic office. We will have less days that we choose to feel retaliated or be treated differently in our workplaces and in our world. Just as we start to choose spiritual friends, often 30,000-year-old ones because they know the dirt on us and don't care, as we call our spiritual family and our strengths back together, we start becoming more aware of how we are here in every moment to learn. Now, it doesn't always mean we like our teachers, but we always learn because that natural law of cause and effect of attraction is always in place, and some days we attract better than others. Certainly that wonderful DVD that's out, The Secret, is making everyone much more aware. Most everyone watching it because they want the law of abundance to be more prevalent in their lives, to attract that, you know, abundance of financial reward into our life, or that the one for us, the soulmate attraction. But truly, in every moment, we are attracting something in our life. So when we start becoming truly aware of what we're attracting, we can start looking at what we are to learn within that attraction. Now, some days we are learning to be, you know, we can be asked to go by spirit, to go to a place and have inner reaction in that place, not even about us. Sometimes we have come to do what I call spiritual payback. Now, some people, if you believe in karma, you might come back to work out karma with someone. But I also think sometimes we're just asked at random by God, Goddess, all that is, insert your favorite deity, to come and be put in a situation to strengthen our character, but also to give some other soul a lesson in forgiveness, to learning to forgive, or learning to understand, or learning to become enlightened. And if you've ever read Little Soul in the Sun by Neil Donald Walsh, it's a children's book, but it's for everyone in this world. When you read that book, it's very, very amazing experience to read that book because it truly gives you some spiritual ahas that sometimes we're on the other side and we're going, okay, yeah, send me to Earth, no problem. You know, when you're there, you've got all that spiritual backup, that cosmic backup, and you're aware of it, so you're thinking, no big deal, send me down there, coach. I'm ready for the big game. I got it. I know it. I'm all-knowing. I'm all-seeing. I'm aware. I am a spiritual, powerful being, and my light is on. And in that moment, you know, God has got to have a sense of humor. And they, infinite intelligence has to be smiling the biggest smile in that moment because they know when they send us down the chute into this reality and we get in this dimension and we forgot even how to speak as we come in as babes. You know, we come out of the darkness into the light down that tunnel. And we come out, we go, I can still hear. I am aware, I can hear the other side, I'm connected as children, as babies we are, and I can hear my angel saying, it's going to be okay, calm down, don't scream. Because we come out screaming, wah! What was I thinking in that moment, you know? We hit that cold air and we give out a big yell of life. We suck in this wonderful life energy of air and oxygen, and we our lungs burst forth with that cry. And that cry is, oh my God, what did I do? I manifested coming here. And as we are children, when we're children and we can't verbally communicate, they are still aware. They are aware with every sense of their being. And that's why we come in as sensor feelers. You know, people when I'm teaching classes are always going, but I want to see spirit. Well, when we're children, we see spirit, but we are sensor feelers. We are sensing and feeling our way in a new dimension, in this new dimension, trying to figure out what are the symbols, the language of now, the language of the here and now, because we are hearing in thought forms. We are hearing in mind words, mind images, mind knowingness. And then we are using our tactile senses, our sense of hearing, touch, smell, taste, all those things, smell, trying to acclimate to this environment that we have been ejected into. And so, as we become more spiritually aware, we start getting the hang of it. For a while, we don't have the hang of it. We're just reacting when we're wet or uncomfortable. We're reacting when we're hungry to needing food and substance. And those reactions, you know, mom, dad, somebody gets the hang of. You know, so they feed us and they change us and they nurture us and we react with quietness and cooing and our happy sounds when they are saying goo goo gaga and when they are giving us love and nurturing. When we feel abandoned, separate, we feel we've been alone too long, we start reacting and crying. So we learn right away that reacting gets us something. We learn that if we cry, they're going to check us, and they're going to give us food, they're going to take care of us, check if we're wet, and we're going to get some kind of reaction. So that's why some kids start really very young throwing tantrums and reacting, because they know that there's a reaction and that they get paid attention to. Then our parents start getting the hang of that this is not a healthy thing, that we need to help direct their actions and reactions. And so we start learning that, okay, there are things that we can do that are we get good reactions for and things that we do that we get bad reactions. Because one of the first things we learn is the word no. And part of the word no to us is not because no about something that's not necessarily good, but sometimes it's a reaction about fear. If you look at kids, they're fearless. They'll, like, try and walk on the narrowest wall, go near the fire, you know, go near hot things, and mom screams no, dad screams no, parents are reacting in a protective mode. And so kids subconsciously start to get, what is the mom, dad worried voice? What is the because you'll learn that a no, don't do that because I don't want you to do it, is different than the no, you're in danger. So all of these things start becoming part of our belief system, part of our reaction, our sensory knowingness system, even before we really get what the word no means. We just at first know that there's a tone or change that says, uh-oh, red light, warning. And so as we mature and start learning more and start learning so many things from our environment, from those around us, not even sometimes our own belief systems, but just really generic things that are societal that are unacceptable. And so we start learning how to stuff things in ourselves, in our energy fields and things. So we start kind of becoming less trusting, less close, less connected to our spiritual beingness. From a very, very young age. By 5 years old, most people have been taught to react and to be trained into some form of a societal structure, a community, a family structure first, parental guidance, then our family structure, extended family, grandparents, siblings, then a society, the community, and school, and on, it grows extensionally outward. So, by the time most children are 5 years old, of course, now we have the internet, which is instructing us. You know, these kids are like so whiz kids on those computers by five. You know, they're teaching me something. But truly, we have to look at what are we choosing to own as our belief systems, as our sensory, and as our connectedness to spirit. Because as we become more connected to this social interaction, and the actions of our quote-unquote tribe, then we have to learn, because if you're raised perhaps, let's say, your social upbringing is in Native American culture that is still in a structured belief system of more natural things, and you're still believing in Great Spirit, and you have that group tribal experience, you're going to be different than the person who is raised in New York City in the Bronx and has that structure of New York City as a tribal situation. Or if you are raised in an Amish community with that tribal situation and upbringing, that each of our belief systems, each of our surroundings, our environment starts impacting our spiritual reaction and belief system. So pretty soon we're not reacting out of spiritual belief systems necessarily, but we're reacting out of the collective consciousness. So if your community, your family, your tribe, your community does not have a structured belief system of connection with spirit, but believes that there is not a spiritual connection, that you, there's a right, there's a wrong, and there's that you are the person involved, then you get me-centric much faster than if you have a spiritual belief system. So if you, and also if you believe in a religion, that's an I'm going to get you religion, you know, that if you don't jump through all the spiritual hoops, that, you know, you're going to be condemned by a god or a spiritual being, then your reactions of how you travel through life is going to be different. So all of these things combine to help us and create us to have reactions. And so my belief systems, and now I'm on my day of having a bad day at the cosmic office and being mad at whoever it is, if it's, let's say it's the boss at work, I need to look and take a moment and say, am I reacting out of something that really has nothing to do with this boss in this moment? Am I just reacting out of past woundedness? Well, every boss I've ever had hasn't been mean to me, you know. Am I mad at authority figures? Am I reacting to authority figure in my family, a mother or father who may have been over me? How much of this is personal responsibility? And if you go back into yourself and you find out, you know, wait a minute, this really isn't about me. There's, you know, I don't have those issues. I don't have that reaction about that. So then you ask, okay, maybe I'm here to teach something. And if I'm here to teach it, how am I going to teach it? What am I going to teach? What are my choices and options? Because when we get in the box and we think we're just the victim, we lose the option for choices, conscious choices about the reaction. Because if you don't like your job, if you're in a situation where you are constantly abused at work, there may be lots of choices. For example, if you work for a company that has a union, you have a choice of going to that union and saying, you know what, this person really does have issues against perhaps females or males, and maybe they need to be caught up in the responsibility of being educated about what is appropriate and not appropriate about abuse. Perhaps you're there because that person has been abused and has never dealt with their woundedness. Perhaps they come from an alcoholic background where they were abused by an alcoholic, say, father or mother, and so their anger is just there, seething. Maybe they have stopped the alcoholic abuse, meaning that they no longer have an interaction with that parental figure. They may have chosen not to be an alcoholic themselves, but perhaps they inherited that alcoholic personality, which is verbal abuse. And they may be totally unaware of it. So maybe your opportunity is to teach them that it's not okay to verbally abuse anybody. That in fact, they have done wonderful by breaking the experience and making the choice not to become an alcoholic, but that they are a dry drunk and carrying on the abuse pattern, and that they today, in this moment, can choose to change that and get help in many, many ways. So sometimes it's about that. There are so many things that interplay into why someone comes into our energy field and makes us react how we react. Recently, I was put in a situation where I was asked to go into an organization and facilitate change. And when Spirit asked me to go there, they asked me if I could pray and if I could facilitate change. And I didn't know that change for these people would be very scary. It would really create a lot of threats and, you know, personal angers and personal fears, and all of this stuff would spew out on me. I was like, you know, about 2 months into this, I'm going like, what were you thinking sending me? I don't think I'm up to the job. I mean, you know, I'm having real big second thoughts here. And I really, because it was, I got personally attacked. And I thought, wow, you know, who would have thought this would facilitate this kind of reaction? But I really realized it really was that they were so threatened by change that somehow if someone had a new idea, they thought it made them less than, rather than saying, it's just a new idea. It's not that your idea is bad. It's just a different idea, and that it's facilitating change and growth. And they had a lot of fears about, oh, my God, if we grow, what if we can't handle that? What if, oh, my God, we become bigger than, you know, the 12 people that are there? And what if all of this explodes into being something far more magnificent and greater than we thought? That limitness had become such a norm for some people that it was absolutely tremendously frightening and scary. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of this scariness and this anger and this, oh my God, it has to be my way or the highway kind of attitude, they got an epiphany that, oh, it's just about growth after all. And that in growing, it gives more hands to do a lot of things. That delegation can be a good thing, that one person doesn't have to do it. In fact, some organizations get founder syndrome. They get caught up in the person that founded it is the deity and the God, and it can only be done that way. And, you know, but what was done, you know, 45 years ago is not how we do things today. You're not typing on the old Underwood typewriter today. Why? It's not practical. That we can facilitate things coming into the 20th century and yet not have to lose the sweetness of the intimacy that can be in an organization that is, you know, 50 or 60 or 100 years old, that we can keep some of the core values, but we can send memos and emails on the computer rather than, you know, hand delivering, and we can use a new format rather than something. You know, we don't do calligraphy from biblical times anymore. Why? It's slow, and it doesn't expedite things. But it doesn't mean that we can't make that email that beautiful, make it that dynamic. So we're in a time of change, and change facilitates awareness. Awareness facilitates personal responsibility and connection with God, Goddess, all it is. So today, if you've had a bad day at the office, or you want to talk a bit about how things may not be working in your world, want some insight in it, if you want to talk, get a little message from Spirit, please call 1-877-876-5227, and we'll see if we can't add some enlightenment in a situation that might be going on in your life that's difficult. In fact, sometimes when I see people in a situation where, say, they're in a custody battle, you know, most custody divorces are nasty. Most divorces are nasty. People are mad at each other, and so they're in the blame game, rather than sometimes we came together, did what we were supposed to, and we're just done. It's not about anybody being right or wrong. You're just done. And when you can leave in that situation of, you know what, we came together, we had a great time in the beginning, we learned some things, and then it got not good, and so we need to learn to call it quits, and we're just done. And it's not about you know, when you victimized me and, oh my gosh, you didn't show up here. When we can get out of that mindset that it's not that, but we're just done, and we can choose to make this a good divorce, and we can choose to learn from it and be better people, and we can learn not to victimize the children if they're there, then we have spiritually really become the more, the wider perspective on things. I know when we're caught in whatever situation it is, whether it's a divorce or someone cheated on us or, you know, something's going on, it's personal. We're personally invested. And so in that moment, we're too close for it. We are. We have to step back and say, Okay. What happened here that someone would choose to be unfaithful and have an affair? Somehow in that I didn't show up. Somehow in that relationship, something didn't work for that person, or they wouldn't have had the affair. Now, that's really hard to take when you're in it, because, boy, you want to blame them. You want to say, how dare you break that commitment, that faith with me? But often when it goes on, there's something that's been going on, usually a long time, underneath. Now, there are a few occasions when that's not true, when someone has an affair, is unfaithful, and everybody thought things were going good, but there's something in that person that happened that we have to ask, what is going on with this person? You know, is it a pattern in them? Is it something happened that the other person did entice them, and they need to look at that and own their co-responsibility with the action that happened? And often I've seen people have affairs, come back, work through all their issues, find out it's both on both parts, or that that person had a weak moment and it's some kind of karmic something that happened, and yet they're willing, though the other spouse is willing to forgive them, and they work through it and they have a stronger marriage than I've ever seen. And that's very rare. It is a lot of work and a lot of personal responsibility, and they choose not to play the blame game. If you choose to stay in the guilt and that person can never be forgiven, and you play your 45, then you get ruts in your 45s, I'll tell you, and you get in a rut in life, and that anger, that distrust, that stuff will eat you up. And it is a process. It does not happen just add water, instant forgiveness, instant metaphysics. Everybody I teach workshops to, we laugh about this. We talk about it because it's true. And I, at my own road, my own path, absolutely, there have been times when I want just add water, instant metaphysics. I want to be instantly out of this situation, instantly forgiven. I don't want to do the homework. But the truth is, if you look down, you got 2 feet and you're walking on your path. If you're in this earth realm doing physical, you are here to experience and learn. Nobody gets out without it. And it's true. Sometimes I like the teacher and sometimes I don't. And sometimes I don't even want to hear it. I have select hearing. Of course, my husband never has that, of course. But we all get select hearing. We all get, you know, in that mode where we're in confusion and we're stuck and derailed. You know, we're going down our spiritual path. And I'm in those times when, man, synchronicity happening. I'm telling you, sometimes it's such a high, it's such a spiritual role, and I love it because sometimes you are in oneness with God, Goddess, all that is, and you are getting the gigs, you are getting angel cruises. I mean, you know, things are manifesting, and I'm having the time of my life because Spirit has provided, and I have chosen non-separation. And then I get full of myself. And I get derailed, I get sidetracked because I get caught up in the meism. And the minute that happens, that synchronicity, the flow, absolutely stops. And you get stuck in the woundedness, or why is everybody else's book published but mine? Why are so-and-so getting all the radio and TV shows but I'm not? Whatever your gig is, I'm using personal examples because I know them oh so well. But the truth is, it's ego. We're stuck in ego in some way. And ego's a funny critter because it can be big me, little you. I'm better than you. You're not good enough. Or it can be poor me. I'm not good enough. So it never works for me. Wah. But the truth is that what we're looking for, rather than the ego trap and that little voice nudging us along, you're not good enough. You're never going to get it right. Blah, 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 blah. We're looking for self-esteem, self-value, self-worth that says, I am good at what I do. I am a good spiritual reader. Saying that does not mean make anyone less than or anyone better. It just is, I'm good at my job. There are people that are better than me at my job, and there are people who are not quite where I am, but are working towards it. Welcome to the airwaves.
Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Am I on? Oh, hi.
Hi.
No, I'm sorry. I missed the first half of the show. I totally forgot. I just tuned in. but you said call in if you'd like a message from Spirit.
Sure. So I need your name and where you're calling from.
I'm Yvonne in San Francisco, and if Kathy's listening, I'd like to say hello, Kathy. I told her for the first time to tune in. She's got to hear your radio station.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. Well, Yvonne, let me see what I get for you.
Okay.
The first thing I hear is that there's lots of moves and changes, so I don't think it's a physical move yet, but I see, I'm feeling like I'm going to make a leap of faith for you. And I think it's a really great one because it's really a window of opportunity. And it's not the Grand Canyon, okay? Mm-hmm. It's like stepping from one room to the other. It's a, you know, it's that little threshold thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's a good leap of faith. And I think it really, the universe wants to support you in this. And they say that you've done some homework for this. So yay for you. Because most of the time, you know, we want somebody to do our homework for us and get straight A's. But this time you've earned your A's.
Yeah.
And so this is a lot of steps forward to you, for you, and I really feel that it's around work but also personal.
Yeah.
So one's facilitating the other. I also hear the name John. So do you have a John that's in your life?
Not at all.
Okay, so there's a John coming in with this that it's not like the generic John, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Used for a guy. You're going to meet this John. You know, it's not that kind of thing. It's going to mean that there's a person named John that's going to be important in your life.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's going to facilitate with this change, which is like a gift from Spirit. So it's not about the guy John in your life. It is about this person named John who's going to facilitate this stepping forward and giving you a leg up. So it's a good time. Actually, this is a great year for you. 2008, good for you.
Oh, yay.
Middle of 2008, 2007, 2008, till about June of 2008. And then you're going to take a little sabbatical, okay? So you're going to feel like you plateau a little bit. But it's just called rest, honey. It's called vacation. So it's not that things are stopping. It's just giving you time to kind of catch up with all the change that's facilitated. So fabulous. Atta woman. Yay.
Okay. Well, thank you so
much. You're welcome.
I look forward to 2008 because I am doing a lot of work, and you're right. It's personal, and nobody can help me in this.
Yeah, nobody can dig out of our own basement, you know. We got to do it, the decluttering ourselves. The nice thing for you, Yvonne, is this time you don't store it.
Yeah.
You don't, like, sort it out in piles and kind of keep it. You know how you sort? I sort from my house to the garage. Right? Till we can't get another thing in the garage. And then, you know, finally we're sorting them and we're taking all the way to the curb. And Thursday's garbage day. Yay.
Yeah, you know, and that's so perfect. You're making me laugh because it's true. I'm back in the garage of many years ago where I stored things very neatly. I thought they were gone, but they're not.
No.
So I am tossing them out this time around. It's real deep cleaning.
It's great because, you know, it's funny. We will save, like, say, a little fear we have, like, okay, I used to be very claustrophobic. So for a while, I would, like, hang on to that, and I would say, oh, God, I'm afraid of closed-in places. Until I finally faced it, and then, you know, it's like when I gave up that fear, I hung on to that fear because I knew it, right? It was a comfortable thing. But if we don't give up some of those things, if we can give up that fear and face it, and I'm not saying jump out of a plane, but I'm saying face those fears, and there's many ways to face fears without causing bodily harm.
Exactly.
Then we have room for other things, and our next little fear that we face will probably not even be that big. Mm-hmm. And we waste 90% of our energy on our fears that never happen.
Yeah, and I tell you, you're absolutely wonderful and very right on. It's funny how we're speaking in generalities, but then again, we're really not. You're right on point. I am facing my biggest fears in life, finally at 50.
You don't like change.
And I'm clearing them out, huh?
You don't like change.
No.
Change is scary.
I know.
We get caught up in that very familiar box, you know, and we forget that as long as we're in that box, we are confined.
Yeah.
The minute we release, and I mean, when we start releasing, oh my God, we start releasing a lot of things in our lives. When you start cleaning that basement and then you go to the garage or you clean the closet and then you go to the garage, guess what will happen? The side effect of those actions. Decluttering. You will start decluttering people that don't serve you anymore in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know what? You won't have time for them.
Yeah, and I've actually already done that.
Yeah, and as soon as you don't have time to listen to them, it was like I was saying earlier in the deal, you know, if you're doing gossip, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because if you have a friend, you know, I wish I could say I was exempt, but I used to have a friend I called, And we would commiserate about a job we were in that we didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would 1-800-WAN to each other. And we wasted all our energy rather than looking for a better job, rather than getting out of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it kept our energy low.
Exactly.
So when we stop that action and we start saying, you know what, I'm choosing not to do that. I'm going to choose to draw that energy to create, you know, the next job or whatever you want in your life, then sometimes you'll lose that friend. Sometimes that friend will fall away because they want to own that misery of company thing.
Yeah.
Like, or if you've been in bad relationships and you have a girlfriend that's a bad relationship and you talk about the bad relationship until you find Mr. Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you don't talk anymore because you don't have anything in common anymore. You don't have the bad guy syndrome going on. So what you need to do then is start praying for your girlfriend that's still choosing the bad boy syndrome to choose differently. So this is a fabulous time for you. You're really decluttering your life. Your energy field is getting much clearer and some really good choices. Financially, a lot of abundance comes to you around January, February of 2008 because you're letting the flow happen.
Yeah, I am. Yay. Okay, well, thank you. I don't want to hog the show.
Thank you so much. Blessings.
You have a good one.
I am.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. But truly, as we hear the example of Yvonne's decluttering, really, truly, as we start decluttering our lives, whatever the clutter is, and honest to God, I have to tell you, talk about getting cosmically busted. Last year, John Holland was here, who we talked about last week. He's going to be actually at ARE. So if you get the chance to go to his workshop, he's just a marvelous medium. You can find out about him on www.edgarcasey.org or his own site, which is johnholland.com. He is an author of Hay House. He was here in Seattle, and he was doing a workshop, and he was kind enough to actually have me involved with his workshop a little bit, and he called me up on stage to do a reading, actually. But afterwards, he said, Atira, you need to feng shui your house, darling. He says, you need to declutter. And I felt so, I was like, oh, my God. And all my girlfriends, of course, were in the audience laughing like crazy because they knew I'm like the ultimate clutterer. And they were sort of like, oh, man, Atira, you were cosmically busted. So when you go to workshops and you go to things or you call me on the air, no, if I see it, I'm going to tell you. And if you don't like what you're hearing, oops, because you will get cosmically busted when spirit wants you to look at things. So for my birthday, one of the ladies in my class remembered John saying that and gave me a feng shui book. Thank you, Midori, because it is truly helping me. Because sometimes we need that little cosmic push, even though we hear it from someone, from spirit provided that message from John, to the next thing in our life which gives us, oh, okay, now I really need to get serious about this. Because we sometimes hang on things that really, truly do not serve us. Whether it's, you know, clutter, actual physical clutter, clothes that, you know, we have outgrown. How many of you, I know women are notorious for this, God, I was for years, they save that size 12. They're a size 14, 18, 16, whatever it is, but we're still hanging on that size 12 because someday we're going to get back in it. I think it's fine to save one thing if you have a goal, if you're making a commitment to go there. But if you've saved your wardrobe from grade 12, and you know you're really never going to get in it, and A and B, it's outdated, truly let go of it. Because the truth is, you don't need those 62 cell phones that are hanging in your bottom drawer that don't work because you've upgraded to the new whatever. Take those cell phones and take them to a church, Unity Church, our other churches, or a battered women's shelter, and gift them. They recycle them. They get money for them. You know, some churches take them and they recycle them, they use them for things. The same with all those old ink things that are hanging out in your computer. Recycling this kind of stuff when you're cleaning out your physical basement and your garages and your storage spaces, we can be of service in many, many ways. We don't all have to be of service by being in the ministry. We have a ministry every day. Every day that you wake up and you take a breath, you are a gift to someone. And so we can choose to really change the world. So, Yvonne, thanks for that wonderful call-in. And if you want to call in, 1-877-876-5227. Today's show is about making spiritual changes, taking personal responsibility for our actions and reactions, and choosing to grow spiritually in the light of spirit. You know, I really say at the end of all my shows, let your heart light shine to light your way and the way for others, and I mean that. Sometimes we need to shine a light in someone's dark space. Everyone goes through, if you do Earth, if you're here long enough, you're going to go through the dark night of the soul, times where you have suffered a losses. And it can, losses are many things. James Van Praagh's book, Healing Grief, is one of the best books on grief because we grieve for lots of things. We don't just grieve over people who pass away. We grieve over I grieved a lot in my life over bad grades. All the time I was in school, I was a very poor reader, terrible grades. I really suffered through, was held back in third grade. Oh, I thought that was the biggest tragedy of my world. At that age, it was, anyway. It would be 22 years before, from the time I was born, till I was in my 20s, about 22, when I went to college. I got brave enough to go to college, thanks to my husband, and found out I was dyslexic, that I had an actual learning disability, that actually I really wasn't dumb and stupid, and that I just had this problem with reading, that I turned words around, and it, the minute I found that out, I changed my world, because I knew, I learned, because I would think, God, why can I get it when they're talking to me? Why am I good at several things, but why do I make mistakes on certain things? Why, when I write a phone number down, I'll turn the last two numbers around sometimes? Why, when I'm doing, you know, I was retail for many, many years, I did retail. In fact, I worked many, many years in retail and caught a lot of stolen credit cards and fraudulent credit cards, and I can remember the security guy coming to me and asking me, Atira, you know, we'd really like you to teach. Because 1 year I caught like 100 credit cards, bad credit cards. And the guy from Sirhood comes and says, Atira, would you come in and we want you to teach how you catch these credit cards, you know. And I looked at him and don't think I can do that. And he goes, well, what do you mean? There has, you know, you have to have a system about this. And it was really hard for me to finally just say to him, you know, spirit tells me. And of course he looked at me and thought, what does that mean? And I said, well, it means that I hear it's stolen. I hear from spirit that it's stolen. And I know from, you know, Dom was telling me. And I said, I can't, you know, I don't know how to teach that. I don't know how to teach people how to hear their Dom because it's my norm and I've always done it. And I can remember he really watched me very carefully after that because I think, of course, he probably thought I was a few fries short of a happy meal and crazy. But he knew that whatever I was doing or however I was hearing this, that it did work. But those are the things that happen in life. Some people are really good, you know, developing by before you pick up the phone, start practicing. Who's on the other end of that phone? You know, learning, a lot of things can be learned. And now I know, many years later, that I probably could have taught people to sense and know if a card was stolen. But at that time, I was too young and insecure in my abilities to be of service to spirit and to be service to the security guard. But as we grow and mature, as we start really learning metaphysics, going and trusting spirit and learning that sometimes when we get a message in public, although very embarrassing, declutter your house, Atira, it's a great message for me because I knew in that moment I had to have a sense of humor about it. I had to go, okay, you know, I'm cosmically busted because obviously I can't move on in my world unless I really start decluttering and getting rid of things. And really, truly, we can't get the new if we're hanging on to the old. If you're carrying a load of stuff in your arms and I want to give you a wonderful latte, if your hands are full, can you grab that latte? No, impossible. Unless I'm willing to say, I brought you a latte, let me set it down here, let me take some of your burden, let me co-work with you, and here, you can have time, you can have this gift, this spiritual gift. Sometimes we're so busy being busy and owning all this junk, and because we think it makes us so important. Oh my gosh, it makes us crazy. And I was laughing before I came on the airwaves. Don was talking to me, and Don said he had all this wonderful sage. And we were talking about, he said, well, yeah, but I don't want to sage and get rid of spirits. And I go, well, you know, yeah, maybe you don't want to sage to get rid of spirits, but we can sage and get rid of negative situations. are negative energies that we're holding on to. Because I love how Spirit provides a segue. You know, I laughed about it. We laughed because it was just like such a cosmic gift to have that information to say, you know, sage isn't used just to get rid of spirits. You know, because sometimes we want to keep the spirits around us. You know, in fact, I'm teaching this wonderful development class, spiritual development class for the Church of Divine Grace, the Spiritualist Church. And it's been a wonderful ongoing class for me because, A, it's taught me how much I really do know, how much I need to learn, and how wonderful it is to interact with spirit in every day. And to teach, you learn, you know, sometimes you don't break things down. You just know, you know it, or you've done it some way all your life, and but you don't break it down till you have to teach it. But by teaching, we start breaking it down and analyzing how things work. And so in this class, you know, the whole object of it is to commune with spirit, to have a seance, to hold a circle, and to commune with spirit, angels, guides, masters, and passed over loved ones. So in this, we were talking about why some people, you know, are working towards communicating with their angels and their spirit guides, and yet, if somebody says somebody's house is haunted, we're all spooked out. We don't want to, oh my God, oh no, you know. But the truth is, that might be just a lost spirit that just needs somebody to say, you know what, these are angels, these are people to help you. We were having one of the seances, a soldier came who had been killed in action, was confused about it. He thought he still had to go back and rescue his buddies and, you know, what to do, and he didn't trust anybody, and he had been drawn by the light, our light and our energy. And people were saying, oh, well, just tell him to go to the light, just tell him. But he didn't get that the light was safe. For him, the light was another explosion. So there was fear-based around it. And it's interesting because I just thought everybody took care of these kinds of things. Everybody had these people who have passed over come and talk to them. So I didn't think about breaking it down for my class to say, as a collective class, we could do this. We can bring another loved one who he would be safe to interact with to help this person, to tell him. So what happened was some other soldiers that were in his unit who passed at the same time as this explosion, who had already gone to the light, came and said, hey, here, we're still with you. Here's what's going to go on. Here's what this light is versus the light of being blown up. And then they brought, after the person got used to for a few minutes of that, those comrades in arms, then their loved ones came. And they all went into the light with the angels, and it was fine. Sometimes when a person is traumatically transitioned, they're in that state of flight or fright, and they're owning their humanness, and they're stuck in it, so they don't get that an angel's okay and safe. They may not even have the belief system of an angel. If you have a religious belief system that doesn't believe in angels and doesn't believe in a god, or you know, you're atheist or you're Buddhist, and your person that needs to come is not in the form of an angel-like entity, it has to come in the form that is right for your consciousness involvement. And so you can help. You can pray and help as a collective group or an individual. I mean, I always pray every time I go by a hospital. Whether I go in the hospital or not, I pray. Every time I hear an ambulance, siren of any kind, I pray for the people who are going to rescue and the people who need rescue. We are spiritual beings and can be a service in every moment that we're here. And once you start that action, you start that choice of doing that, your life, you have so much fun being a spiritual person. When you, because you love, I mean, your energy gets fed by it, you know, because for every action, there's a reaction. So for every time I pray, someone prays for me. Every action gets, you know, enlightenment. And so as you start making these conscious choices to see the world in a different way, it's an amazing experience. Your consciousness starts to expand and explode, and you become lighter and enlightened. So it's been a wonderful day to go from a bad day at the cosmic office to being spiritually uplifted by learning from the experience, of feeling like we're not in control, to knowing that we are absolutely in control of our life, in that we are co-creators, and in every moment we can choose to create and co-create differently. In each moment, I can choose to let the darkness in or the light. And every moment, as we are in our world, pay attention. Look around you. See the light that Spirit has brought to you. Notice children. Children are absolutely divinely wonderful sparks. And in every moment, the children will tell more truth. Out of the mouths of babes really truly comes the answer. That's why I think Jesus was so attracted, the Master was so attracted to children, because their light shines so brightly and innocently, especially the younger ones. And as they get older, they get sort of corrupted by the attitude. But as we choose to have an attitude of gratitude, we choose the light, all things are possible. So until we talk again, remember to let your heart light shine, to light your way and the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of angels. For more information about our show, please check www.angelscribe.com or www.bbsradio.com.
Red doesn't mean a thing.